And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast live from the diverse and thriving metropolis of Toronto, Ontario, Canada, where the hockey team may be eliminated from the playoffs and led by an Arizona trash bag, but the basketball team, second or third fiddle for so long. Third, maybe the Argos?
Depends on how the Jays are doing, but right now second can trail to third.
Is two wins away from the NBA Finals after a very impressive home taking care of business that I frankly did not see coming. And there's one playoff series going on. That's it. There's only one series. We should discuss the series. We should discuss this series hardcore. We should not discuss nonsense. We should discuss basketball. To help me do that, Kevin Arnovitz, unlucky enough to be on this series, and so I dragged you into the studio again. And Bruce Arthur, spokesman for all Canadians on this podcast.
It's a lot of responsibility, but I'm ready for it.
How are you guys doing?
Awesome. This is a super interesting series, man.
It is. It is a super interesting series.
The Toronto Raptors were two wins short of the NBA Finals in 2016, but they weren't.
Oh, that was fake.
Yeah, that was completely fake. Before Game 6, that was the series where LeBron, after Game 5, said, you know, I've been in adverse situations in my career, and I didn't feel like this was one of them.
Still an underrated all-time just disquote.
Yes. The beginning of LeBron owning the Raptors in an increasingly clownish fashion. But before Game 6, I was sitting on the bench with Luis Scola. I think I might have told you this story before. And I said, Luis, both teams have won at home. What's going to happen? He went, I do not think they took us very seriously in games 3 and 4. This would be hard.
Yeah,
and they lost by 25.
There was definitely a night out by the Cleveland Cavaliers at some point in that series. I'm just speculating. Everybody loves Toronto. I saw Barkley after the game last night. Barkley was going on about how he loves Toronto so much. Everyone loves Toronto. Players love Toronto. So, I did not see the home sweep coming. Last night was, you know what I really like? And Arnovitz, you are president of the Kyle Lowry is Good club.
I am.
You know what I like?
I have cards.
Huh?
I have cards.
Do they have an outline of his giant, a silhouette of his giant ass on the cards? Kyle Lowry's ass is just a regular subject on this podcast. He's getting a little uncomfortable.
It's a hockey ass.
Yeah.
Like, you talk to hockey players, they all have to have their pants specially made.
Do they really?
It's like long track speed skaters. Same thing.
Okay. I like when Kyle Lowry has a game where you don't have to be like, okay, but look, did you see the screen he set and like the deflection that he got that led to the offense? Where you can just be like, oh, the dude had 15 points in the first quarter and totally set the tone for the game and was dominant the whole way. What did you see from Kyle Lowry last night?
No, but in defense of the peripherals, there was lots of what I call heavy manufacturing. I love Kyle because he just saw, like, it was just one of those games where he saw, oh, the defense isn't set. I'm going to thrust my body on a drive into someone unsuspecting who's not as smart about basketball as I am, and I'm going to get two shots to the line. And then I'm going to do it again two or three possessions
later.
He
did it after a make early in the game. He just was like, I'm going. I like when he gets a little impatient, like his hands start shaking. He wants the ref, give us the freaking ball so we can inbound it.
He leads the league in, give me the freaking ball.
Him and Chris Paul. It's him or Chris Paul.
But Chris is petulant about everything. Whereas Kyle's is very specific.
And Kyle, at the end of the first half, scored their last 6 points all on free throws. And it was exactly that. We're shaky a little bit.
We're going to go I'm going to take a two for one.
I think Kyle might lead the league in, we need to go for two for one right now, end of the clock. And then he finds contact. And it's the thing we always have to say about Kyle. Everything's hard for Kyle, right? Like, Kawhi Leonard is as strong as any player in the league. Giant hands, great feet. And Giannis has every physical gift you can basically have. And all the other, every all-star has crazy gifts. Kyle's not fast. Kyle's strong, but he's not fast. Can't really jump much.
No.
But it's just, he's such a smart player. And he's in the, he's for the first time, I would say, in his career, he really is in the perfect spot on a team where he doesn't have to carry the load, but on nights like last night, all of his gifts come to bear.
Speaking in the sort of intelligent ball player honors class category, Zach, very good game for another favorite of ours, Marc Gasol.
Oh, Mark. Well, so here's my stat of the game, and this is now the stat that I monitor for every Raptors playoff game. 32 assists on 41 baskets.
Yep.
And... as great as Kawhi is, the way they played the first two games, they cannot beat this team playing that way. Mm-hmm. Kawhi won on everything. He's just going to be mid-range jumpers, and he's just not a good enough passer where he's going to turn that into open threes for lots and lots of people.
Exactly.
And their assist rate for the playoffs was something like 52% mm-hmm. with Kawhi and Gasol on the floor before games 3 and 4. It was 70% and then 78% last night. And it's not just like the obvious thing of, well, you get more assists because you make more shots. I think in this series, the assists are symptomatic of the Raptors' offense has a little more variety. They're getting better shots. Like last night, they got a reasonable number of shots at the rim, which they mm-hmm. had not gotten at all in this series. And a lot of those were Gasol finding guys on backdoor cuts.
Yep.
I wrote it. You've wrote it, written it. The Bucks are overplaying Kawhi so much that
they are on the high side of everything. That is their, I mean, Zach, that third, or, and that's when I realized that Raptors are going to win this game. Milwaukee is not coming back. Is two possessions, and I think over out of three, where Mark and Kawhi just kind of saw that. And Middleton's been mm-hmm. wonderful on Kawhi. Middleton has been terrific, but.
Yeah, if you make Kawhi earn 30 points with two assists and three turnovers on 12 of 25, huge W. For your defense.
But he got Mark and Kawhi noted it. It was just he is going to be on the high side of, because ball denial is such a priority for Milwaukee, you know, at the top of the floor with Kawhi, that is available to them. And Mark, and it's what I love about the collective intelligence of this team. And
yes.
It's also another kind of Kyle-friendly characteristic that this team has.
Absolutely.
And Mark is just so much, he's so much more useful to you if he's not just a five out center, who, by the way, yeah, I mean, can hit the three, but use him as a fulcrum, not just at the high post, but by the way, he can do that stuff at the top of the floor. It doesn't have to be at the elbow.
He's not Brook Lopez, right? Like, he doesn't have to play like Brook Lopez. He doesn't have to be a guy who just screens, pops, and shoots. There was the Kawhi dunk where he dunked mm-hmm. On Giannis. If you watch it, Gasol just does the little head bop where he goes, come on, come on, come on, let's go. I can see it. You can see it. Let's go. And he did. And if you look at his face when he threw the next pass to Kawhi, he gets excited. With Gasol, this team was second in the league in assist rate. And that was not
67% assist rate with Mark on the floor.
That is not how they played for a lot of the season. But Mark, it's like not only was his passing helpful, but everyone else went, hey, passing's fun. And that's also why, one of the reasons why, they were the best three-point shooting team in the league once Mark got there, because the ball started to move and you got a help on Kawhi and Pascal's a problem and guys got hot, but still, like, it was such a great way to play with the defense at the back of it. And this was one of the, there haven't been a lot of games in the playoffs where they've played like that.
Yeah. It works in this way as well. You have two sides of the floor. And so you have the Kawhi gravity side of the floor. Mm-hmm. And then you have what I call kind of their finesse side of the floor, which is, and you can do two-sided actions. You can, because frankly, things are going to be a little less congested on that second side because Kawhi is just commanding so much mm-hmm. attention, and rightly so. You're crazy if you don't use that second side. You've got really skilled ball players over there. By the way, like Gasol's getting good dribble handoff action with Norm Powell. You know, like that's
Norm
working.
Made a three.
Yes.
Norm made a three on a dribble handoff where I just thought it was a two because I thought Norm would, and I watched the replay. I was like, oh my God, he just hit an off the dribble three
25
off
handoff.
Yep.
Okay, Norm.
Well, Norm very quietly a 39% 3-point shooter this year. Like, all of a sudden.
I did not know that.
Like, Norm got going this year. He just didn't play that much. He's still a bit of a mystery. He does this every playoffs. Almost every playoffs, there's 1 to 2 Norm Powell games. There was a game
most
against,
of them against
game
the Bucks.
Five against Milwaukee. There was a game 7 against Indiana. And, like, last night he didn't actually shoot that well, but he was a threat to shoot. One of the reasons their assist rate had cratered in the playoffs is no one was making shots. Like, nobody. Like, Kyle, think about this. In game 1, Kyle is their only player to have what is for him an above average offensive game. And it's way above average. But nobody else did. And they were 3 minutes from winning the game.
I got to give them a lot of credit because when they lost game 1, I tweeted it, you tweeted it.
Mm-hmm.
We both felt like, ooh, they let one get away.
Yes.
And you don't get to let one get away against a team this good. And they felt that way too.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned Norm. Ibaka was sensational last night. Van Vliet, I think, was 5 of 6, finally rediscovered his shot. You know, I think Nick Nurse, people have nitpicked his end-of-game play calling, mm-hmm. which is a lot about just having Kawhi on your team.
Sure.
he's done a really good job of tuning out the panic and just being like, I understand the pulse of this team. You guys don't. It's very easy for you to shriek about you can't have Norm and Freddie and Serge on the floor at the same time. You're minus X and X minutes. It's like, we're going to need those guys. These guys mm-hmm. are the guys we're going to play with. I'm going to make a lot of changes because it's the playoffs, but I'm not going to play seven guys, and I'm not going to completely rejigger my rotation so my three bench guys aren't on the floor at the same time. I have confidence in them. And if you're alive long enough, and he was chuckling about it after the game last night. He's like, you know, I wonder what the narrative is now going to be. Our bench is good. And to him, that's him saying, our bench is what it is. It's pretty good. And if we're alive long enough, they're going to turn it around. And they did.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I like, Nick, is I don't even think it's the bench is good or the bench is not good. It's like, look, this is what we've been furnished with. We are going to extract what is good about these very, in some cases, flawed players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to create some sort of amalgamation that works on the floor at a given time. We have to be mindful of size. I mean, I think that's something that Nurse has sort of, you know, battled with. It's just they've been getting just the crap knocked out of them for 6 weeks now, right? Like they got bludgeoned on the boards by Orlando. They had a very big draw. It's kind of funny. Orlando, Philadelphia, Milwaukee. And what it's done is in some ways it's underscored, I think, some of the size deficit. They've missed Anunoby. I mean, it's funny how much OG, just by sheer virtual
size. An extra
size.
Big body on the wing. Yeah.
But I like that he has just been, I mean, he's the ultimate pragmatist. And, you know, Serge last night, right? Like, what did he tell Serge? He told Serge, look, just go be a big, massive athlete. Like, don't, not so much don't worry about execution, but just harness this thing that you have that nobody else on the floor for us does. Well, and just be that guy.
And to that point, the stretch that really turned the game was, you know, I've said this many times. I really like when the Bucks go with Giannis and Mirotić as their only bigs. The numbers have been outstanding. I just like that setup for them. I know you can't overdo it, but that. They were minus 15 in 9 minutes last night in that alignment, and part of the reason was that Serge just destroyed them on the offensive glass. And you don't think of Serge or the Raptors that way, but it was a very smart, opportunistic sort of grab of a lot of rebounds, and it turned the game.
It's not even that the bench is good. It's that Nick kind of realized the bench can be good. Like, Fred can be a useful player, and Serge can be a useful player. He's the starting center for 60 games. And Norm, it's a little harder, but he can give you these moments. And the funny thing is, in that Philly series, when you had those three guys on the floor, they really did bleed points. Like, they lost whole games because of that.
Yeah.
And last night, the 13-0 run to start between the first and second quarter, most of it is with those three guys on the floor. And then they did it again in the third quarter to push it to 20.
And they opened the fourth quarter without both Kyle and Kawhi, which, as we
with Giannis on the floor,
which is like gives me the heebie-jeebies watching that.
But Nick has had the guts to do that a few times, like in the Philly series, sitting Kawhi was terrifying, and I think it was in Game 7 he sat Kawhi for the first 2 minutes of the fourth quarter of Game 7, and they got there, right? They got through it and they got there because Nick kind of knows. Last night was the first time he looked at the Raptors, maybe in the whole playoffs, and he went, oh, yeah, that's the Raptors. They've done it once or twice before, but they won 17 games without Kawhi. They beat Golden State with their big four on the floor by 20 without Kawhi. These guys can play. It's just against Philly, things fell apart because the matchups were really tough. Philly really was huge.
Yeah, Philly's a funny, sui generis matchup for a lot of teams.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, and Nick got that question after Game 3 about identity. And, because it's just, we're so far gone from what we thought the Raptors were when I landed here on April 11th. God, has it been 6 weeks? The thing is, the personnel hasn't changed. I don't think they're running the same stuff.
Yeah.
They've adapted certain defensive schemes, but the other hand, it's like, wow, just in terms of sheer identity and what we know about this team, it just doesn't get actualized on the floor all that often.
Nick was asked about their identity during the Philly series, and he boiled it down to defend like hell, trust the pass, and that's about it. Like, and that's where it was interesting. They had to go to Kawhi. At such a level, he took 39 shots in Game 7 against Philly. His usage rate was something like 48%. They had to go to that because other guys just, the confidence was gone or matchups were bad or whatever it was. Danny's lost. Norm's lost. Kyle's thumb is hurt. Mark's confidence goes up and down.
Yeah, Kyle's got the oven mitt on still.
Yeah, no, Kyle's thumb is not good. But last night, again, great Kyle game. Wonderful Kyle game. At some point, Nick just had to hope that enough guys were going to show up. And now when you look at the series, game to game, this stuff doesn't carry. Every game is different. When I look at this series, this is the Philly series all over again. First four games of the Philly series, Toronto blew them out once, Philly blew Toronto out once. And there were two defensive rock fights that both teams could have said, you know, we let that one get away. And that's what this series has been.
Yeah, I was talking about this with someone on the Raptors last night. In the mania surrounding Game 7 and the four-bounce shot, which is, there should be mania around that. And now we've already moved on to, this is a 2-2 series. That Game 4 shot that Kawhi hit over Embiid in Philadelphia is really, you almost forget that 2 weeks ago, I mean, they're on the brink of going down 3-1. Now, they have home court, so you're down 3-1, you still have a shot. But that felt, before that shot went in, that felt like this is, we're inches away from the is Kawhi leaving thing taking over the airwaves and the season being totally on the brink.
Well, and Game 2 was the same thing that Game 1 was in this series. Oh, they let that one get away. They shouldn't have let that go. And then they got blown out.
Let's talk about the other side of the point guard equation. The Bucks and the Sixers made for a really interesting contrast to me all season because the Sixers are in almost Daryl Morey-like talent acquisition mode. Like, I don't just, for the pieces, do they fit? Whatever. We have, like, all these top 20 players. We're going to put them together. But one guy can't shoot. One guy's a big center. One guy wants to run. One guy's Jimmy Butler. He's mad at a lot of people. And we're going to put them all together. Whereas the Bucks are like, we have one super-duper guy, and we're going to fit everyone around him. It's going to be very cozy. It all makes a lot of sense. And I wish they had met in the playoffs because the contrast of the team-building philosophies is very interesting. Mm-hmm. But the big question about the Bucks was, and I think part of the reason why they were underestimated by lots of people, I mean, I picked the Raptors to make the finals before the playoffs over the Bucks in the conference finals, is I think there's just a certain level of, are these guys other than Giannis, like, that good? Like, are we that scared of anybody else on this team? I know that he's going to get them open threes and, you know, yeah, they're going to run into a defense like the Raptors that can help and recover like a lightning bolt. Like, the timing is right and those threes are going to be a little bit more contested and the guys they're going to throw at Giannis are either Pascal Siakam or now Kawhi Leonard, really, really good. You know, are those guys scare you? Middleton brought it.
First time in the series, though.
First time in the series. You know, you give him a pass a little bit.
Yeah.
He was averaging 11 points a game in the series before last night, before going for 30. And by the way, he was their best passer last night by a large margin.
Yep.
You give him a little bit of a pass because he's guarding Kawhi and, and exhausting himself. Eric Bledsoe is disintegrating into nothingness.
He's almost unplayable.
Before our eyes. And Bud is not going to bench him because he and Bud have a very good relationship. I think I can't quite put my finger on it, but I think they've sort of found some bond in their souls together. I think there's something going on there.
Some symbiosis there?
Yeah, and they also gave him a 4-year, $70 million extension.
There is that.
But I think he played 20 minutes last night, and they're just not going to win with him playing. Well, they could win with him playing late, because they have home court advantage. They're the Bucks. They're awesome. They have Brogdon and Hill in reserve. But he has been, and I thought he was an all-star. I thought he should have made the all-star team this year. I think he had an outstanding year. He's on my all-defense team, which I think comes out tomorrow officially. He's just been a disaster, and you know the final stage of disaster status for a guard or a wing is when they're not guarding you, and boy, are they not guarding him.
Mm-hmm.
And Giannis kicks you the ball, and as you're catching the ball, you are moving from 3-point range to 2-point range because you just do not want to shoot. You're not even like running into a drive. You're just sort of hopping out of 3-point range. And he had one in, I think, the third quarter, maybe the second quarter, where he caught it in the corner, did this little hoppy thing, and then took it to the rim at Kawhi. And you're like, my man, that's not going to work out for him.
And by the way, if only it were that, Zach, yet somehow he finds it within himself to come down the court in an early offense situation and jack up a long two, contested off the dribble.
He did that a lot in game 3.
You know what? And it's like, well which one are you? I mean, I'd rather just be the guy who doesn't want to shoot and you're applying ball pressure.
I'd rather him be the other guy.
Of course, I would rather be the other. But, like, God, don't be both. You're both the guy, you know, the pull-up two artist, and you're shirking the line so as not to have to shoot.
Well, and the funny thing is he wasn't good last night, but he's been very good in the series.
I think they're going to have to think very hard about starting Brogdon.
George Hill had a great game 3, and has given Kyle fits in the past in the playoffs.
I forgot about the ghost of that Pacers series where they could not wait to be done with George
Hill. He was an issue. You want to look at where Kyle's reputation for being a non-playoff player kind of lies. A lot of it was in that Indiana series
Wizards,
against
Pacers.
George Hill.
Wizards the year before, yep. Pacers that year.
And Malcolm Brogdon gave Kyle problems the next year against Milwaukee. Yeah. And but Nick Nurse said you can't play all four of them at the same time. And Eric Bledsoe, all year with this Milwaukee team, they're a team that hits you in bursts, right? Like they'll run off 10 points so fast. And Bledsoe's a guy who can get you 7 points in a minute and a half because he just gets layup, three, go.
And completely affects the game defensively.
And absolutely does.
And to his credit, he has not stopped playing defense.
No.
He got a crazy offensive rebound and kick out, midair kick out pass. Like the effort plays are still there. They're just playing 4-on-5 on offense and they're not going to score enough points playing 4-on-5.
Well, the half court offense is a problem for the Milwaukee Bucks right
now.
Has
been all series.
To me, it's the biggest problem the Bucks have in this series is if they don't get points in transition, it's getting harder and harder for them to generate quality looks.
Which is why I want Brogdon with the ball in his hands. And I know I'm sort of a Brogdon apologist.
Don't think apologize.
He's
for
good.
The guy's good, man.
But I mean, he's just like first of all, he can probe. And you've got to decongest.
You know what he is, too? Decisive. Yes. Even when you're like, dude, that's Kawhi Leonard on you. And he kind of burrows underneath him and gets a decent, up and under, up in the, on the rim with a soft touch. Like, how the hell did you do that?
He's strong. They're just Kawhi stronger. But he's strong, he has a floater, and he's a great knockdown shooter. And so the floater helps because when you rush him, he can hit that in-between shot.
You know
he's
who's
a really
good
player,
You know who's getting a pass? And it's always I understand why he's getting a pass is Mirotić. Because it's hard, because he's shooting. And you just know that sometimes shooters are going to have slumps. But he's one of six every game. He makes his first one every game, it seems like, and then misses like seven in a row. And he's not going to bring you much defense. But he threw a couple nice passes last night when they had the Raptors in rotation. But if they're not going to bench Bledsoe, which I don't think they will, and frankly, I don't think they should. I think that would take him apart mentally a little bit. Did you guys see how fast he left the arena last night? I think he was gone before Bud even finished on the podium. He walked by me, and I was talking to a couple people, and I was like, holy, you know what? Eric's already leaving?
Did he shower?
I don't think he showered. I don't think he did media. I think he just left. I think it would break him a little bit mentally to bench him. But Brogdon for Mirotić, which is really just going back to your old starting lineup, is an interesting move. And not just because Mirotić is slumping, but Brogdon is a more natural defender for everyone that the Raptors have on the floor. And he has a much better pick and roll chemistry with Giannis. He's a good screener for Giannis. They have years of shared history together. Years of, you flip the screen, I do this, all these little nuances that you only get by playing together that he doesn't have with Mirotić. Like, Mirotić pick and pop has not happened. It's not a thing in the series. So that's a move that I bet they explore. But Bud is...
There's a fascinating dynamic of how much Milwaukee trusts itself to be good in this series because that's what they've done all year. Same defense, same offense. There's wrinkles, there's some stuff. But they pretty much... They try to make you adapt to them, whereas the Raptors are a team that has beaten teams a lot of different ways and can kind of do different things game to game.
This is the biggest game in Raptors franchise history coming up, right?
Oh, yeah.
Is there even...
I mean, technically they played a Game 5 against Cleveland.
Yeah, I was going to say, that. I remember that being...
I mean,
enormous.
If they'd lost Game 7 against Indiana, they'd probably blow the whole thing up. That could have happened.
Yeah, but that's a first... I agree. That's a first-round series.
But, like... Yeah. Someone's going to face elimination after this game. And if it's the Milwaukee Bucks coming back to Toronto, then the Raptors are somewhere they've never been.
And with a player the likes of which they haven't had since prime Vince Carter.
One thing about Kawhi is we don't know what his health status is, and that to me is still a little bit of a question mark in this series.
I think we know it's not great.
No, right. But how much of it is... dead legs, how much of it is a serious injury, how much of it is, should he be sitting a week, should he be sitting a day and a half, like, have they packed him on ice for 48 hours? Alex McKechnie, the sports genius doctor for the Raptors, I keep saying that guy needs a raise, because they've had to get guys through a lot of stuff in this playoffs, from Siakam's calf, Kyle's thumb, Kawhi's now both legs, as far as we can tell.
Yeah, it is interesting, it's inscrutable. In fact, I trying to write it last night, I wanted to make reference to the fact that, hey, and it's great that the supporting cast stepped up because, Kawhi's not at 100%. I was like, well, how am I writing this? Is it a leg injury? And ultimately, I just relied on Kyle's characterization that he's somewhat limited.
Yeah.
And Nick's commentary that, oh, he's tired. Like, because I was like, I don't really have a, we don't have a diagnosis, and I hate writing about injuries speculatively.
All you can say is that he's limping with semi-regularity.
But he's kind of like a waddler anyway.
Yeah.
Like Kyle's
it's
always a waddler.
It's not an extreme.
Someone on the record said limited, right?
I think that
was
Kyle.
That was Kyle.
Was that he used the word limited?
Yeah.
Well, and he was taking every second possession off sometimes. There was one time where a ball got kicked out to Kawhi at the three-point line. He was standing flat-footed like he was watching a bus go by because he just wasn't part of that possession.
So I think an underrated part of last night's game was Kyle getting hot early. When the Bucks, by the way, came out like a house of fire, and you thought, uh-oh.
Yeah, and Giannis had that sneer going in like 4 minutes in, and I was like, uh-oh.
Giannis and Norman Powell could have a little sneer off. Like, who has that? That would be a good like Jumbotron game, the sneer off. And Kyle just took control of the offense, ran a bunch of pick and rolls, hit a step back three over George Hill in the corner. They ran a Lowry Danny Green pick and roll to get Mirotić switched on him, and he kind of danced with Mirotić, and you don't see Kyle do that much. So I kind of feel himself a little bit on offense.
Yeah.
And I wrote before game four, like, he's got to, like, I wrote it in regards to Lopez. Like, when you got Lopez in that in between space and you're Kyle Lowry, like, you got to do something with that. Hit him with the hesitation dribble and fucking dust him. Excuse me. shoot a step back three over him. Like, get a little, feel yourself a little bit. You're
believe
Kyle
in
Lowry.
Yourself, man.
You're a 5-time All Star. Like, have a little swagger. And I thought he brought that last night. And
I know, but he's just such a utilitarian player, though. I like the part of me that you're absolutely right, and I love that it doesn't really come intuitively to him to do that.
Yeah.
Like, it's strange. You're totally right. But it's just like, but then he wouldn't be Kyle.
When he hit that shot over Mirotić, it was a long two, too. It was like a bad analytics shot. I'm like, all right, Kyle, because Kawhi's sitting over there. And you could tell, I think, everyone with the Raptors would have were like, this is great. You run the show. Here's 4 minutes where Kawhi can be on the court and do nothing on offense and do everything on defense. And I thought, and then they're tied or whatever at 17 or something.
It was a charmed existence for Raptors. I mean, when Danny Green can make 2 field goals off the dribble in a game.
Taking Giannis off the dribble and getting the ball up and to the glass before Giannis
and
got it.
And I say this as someone who
the
voted.
The least probable play in the whole game.
Right, because like, I say this as someone who voted for Danny for second team all defense, who is a big Danny Green fan. He should be fined for dribbling, by and large. Like,
do you know,
in most cases.
Do you want to know what I'm very excited about? I talked to one of the NBA PR staffers who supervises the award stuff, was at the game last night, and I stopped them and I was like, you got to tell me who voted for Mo Bamba. I need to know right now who voted Mo Bamba all rookie second team. Was it an accident? Is there a rookie that's alphabetically close to Bamba? And I don't like to do the thing where I go through the media votes.
Oh God, are you one of these people who goes through people follow on Twitter and retweet?
But
and,
like you get the
and
you
shame
get,
them.
No. Okay. But you get the votes and you're like, Mo Bamba. How did
it
that
might have been a local broadcast.
That's 100% my vote.
It's generally
it's
the local,
be
broadcaster.
A local broadcaster.
I just need to know.
It's
I
like
just
when PJ Brown got a 5th place MVP vote.
PJ Brown got a 5th place MVP.
You sure did, buddy.
This is why we have to expose all of our votes now, right? Like, this is exactly why.
Well, I expose all my votes. I write a column with all my votes
yeah, but you're,
so that everyone can yell at me. And that's all that happens for 48 hours is I get yelled at by people. But I do feel like I don't want to hide in the little I'm going to come out and say it.
And this stuff affects the league. It affects guys' contracts. There's
well,
like,
I believe all NBA is coming out this week. And that is the big kahuna.
Humongous, right? Like, and that's one reason I don't vote in any sport anymore. I used to vote in a bunch of different sports. I don't want to affect in that way guys' careers necessarily. I don't feel comfortable.
It's the thing I'm least comfortable about. It's not, I can deal with the criticism. I stand by my votes. I don't care.
Can you, do you, never voted for the Lady Bing? Can you vote for that?
I have voted for NHL awards. I'm trying to remember if I voted for the Lady Bing.
What's the Conn Smythe?
That's the playoff MVP.
Can you vote for like worst media meal in the NBA and NHL?
Ottawa Senators. Ottawa Senators is so bad that like you just hate yourself so much. It's like eating leftovers at the house of someone who doesn't cook. Like just
let
awful.
Me see. If, there's the Vezina.
Yeah, for goalie.
What's rookie? Calder.
Calder.
Wait, how do you know this?
Somewhere in my brain is hockey.
He spent some time.
Really?
Here.
I was a big Boston Bruins fan until
that. I'm a Southerner.
Byron Defoe means well. The Thrashers.
I was
are they
the
still
Atlanta Flames were my era. That's how old I am.
Oh my God. Are there still
good.
An Atlanta Thrashers? Is that even
no.
a team?
No.
They're now the Winnipeg Jets.
The Winnipeg Jets are back.
Yes. Atlanta has supplied the Canadian Prairies with two
can
separate
Can we get
NHL
the Whalers
franchises.
Back? Why can't we get the Whalers back? If the Jets can come back, why can't the Whalers come back?
Well, I think the Quebec Nordiques are first in line, and then maybe the Hartford Whalers.
Oh, Quebec, we have to have hockey. We're in Canada. Oh, Hartford's close to Canada.
They still don't have it, but the Hartford Whalers, I once saw one of those uniforms in a store.
Top five logo.
One of the most beautiful things you can find in sports memorabilia.
Hockey uniforms really are the best.
There's some good ones.
They just look, anyway, hockey, I love hockey. If I could follow any other sport, I would follow hockey again.
I have a note on Kyle Lowry, by the way. Kyle, I've talked about, and people have talked about how he's not been good enough in the playoffs. That was a narrative around Kyle. And I talked to Kyle like 3 weeks before the playoffs, and I said, you know, he'd sprained a couple ankles, his back had been bugging him, and I said, how you doing with the playoffs coming? I know you were really disappointed last year. And he said, look at my playoff record. Go back from game one against Miami to now. Run the numbers. Because I'm pretty sure Kyle
like
has
run
the
numbers. Like, let me press a button on my computer. run the numbers.
And if you run the numbers, they're superb.
Oh, and by the way, and I did this for that feature I did in terms of just even the plus. He is, other than like 1 year where he was merely average relative to his teammate starters, he has been
exceptional.
Now, we all know that plus minus can be noisy.
Yes, sure. Absolutely.
And we also have a lot of evidence, including continuing this season in a different locale, that DeMar DeRozan as the number one option in a lineup is bad.
It's real bad.
Some of the plus minus was Kyle's on the bench and these other lineups are bad.
True, but I'm somebody who's right. Small sample plus minus, selective plus minus. But I think when a guy is just, it is so consistent over the course. Mm-hmm. Situationally,
I don't doubt that it's real. I don't doubt that it's real. Kyle's a really good player. I think it is fair though to say you can't make no shots. You can't have two games every playoffs where you make no shots.
Well, he does that every playoffs. Though. He does one of those per series.
I do, and
that's just Kyle.
But I think that's a fair. Like, if you're a star player, if you're an all NBA player, if you're counted on to carry some load, even if it's like an 18-point, 6 assists, 5 rebound, fly around like a bowling ball, hitting things, you just can't make no shots in any game. That was what drove them crazy about DeMar, is that DeMar was going to have a game where he's 0-for-8 and they have to bench him in the fourth quarter. You just can't. If you are an all-NBA player, you can't do it.
But Kyle is not an all-NBA player. He is, again, he's in the perfect spot for him.
He has been.
He is not now, though. He is the second to third, to some games, fourth best player on a really good team. Like, there are games where Marc Gasol can be better than Kyle, and there's games where Pascal Siakam can be better than Kyle, and they all kind of rotate as your second best player game to game. I think Kyle is close to the second best player because of everything he does, but he's not always that. And offensively, he's not the number two option most nights. Pascal, in theory, is. And so he's in that spot where he can figure out what the team needs and do it, and that's what happened last night, is he saw that Kawhi was not doing much, and Pascal didn't take a shot till the second quarter. So he went, okay, I'm shooting the ball, and I'm going to get Mark some shots, and I'm going to get the guys some shots, and we're going to get going.
And he managed a beautiful game.
Oh,
I mean,
beautiful.
I know it sounds like a thing you say about a guy that's abstract, but you could see it out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in some ways, it was a very the team's collective sensibility last night was very Kyle-ish.
The brain on the floor.
Yes.
And you said, this is a really smart team. Like, everything, you got to remember about the Raptors, everything they're doing is vaguely improvisational.
Sometimes too smart for their own good.
Sometimes that,
They are overthinkers.
And then against Philly, that happened a lot, where it's, I'm going to keep passing, and at some point the shot clock's going to bust.
Hey, by the way, speaking of overthinking, how about the Giannis free throw thing? It's kind of getting fun. I believe that was the loudest I've ever heard a crowd for a free throw in person after he airballed the first one. He's not an airball free throw shooter. It's in his head a little bit. And here, for the series,
he was over 70 this season, right?
Yeah. Well, for the series, Milwaukee is 88 of 121 at the line, and the Raptors are 81 of 98. So they've taken significantly fewer free throws, but essentially made as many. And like, on the margins, that matters. Like, on the margins, they're shooting 83%, and the Bucks are shooting 73%. Speaking of on the margins, here are two other numbers that are very important to consider. Games 1 and 2 combined, Raptors 14 offensive rebounds, 20 turnovers forced.
Mm-hmm.
Games 3 and 4, Raptors 18 offensive rebounds. Okay, so that's not much more. 33 turnovers forced.
That's
to win this series, they have to win the possession game, which the Bucks make it very hard to do because they don't give you offensive rebounds and they don't turn the ball over. But the Raptors force a decent amount of turnovers, and they're going to have to scrounge. And they scrounged and they won the possession game handily. at home, and they're going to have to find a way to eke that out two more times.
And they're also going to have to get to the line, and that's part of that sort of Dean Oliver four factors categories. But they Milwaukee gives you nothing at the rim. You're going to just have to take things on the way. I mean, that's what I loved about what Kyle and both Kawhi did last night. You know, Kawhi got it. Yeah. Like, Kawhi's not as dynamic. He's not going to be as dynamic for the for the rest of the playoffs. His health clearly has been compromised. But what he can do is get to the line.
He can bash his way through.
One thing they did really well, and again, they're such an intuitive team and an improvisational team that I wonder if it just was a coincidence. But a lot of their ball handlers last night snaked the pick and roll, which means you go around one way and you see the defender dropping and then you veer the other way. And you almost, by veering back the other way, you almost veer back into that big man defender who's dropping back and kind of just burrow a little deeper into the paint, sometimes force a switch. Like Gasol got a kick out three out of that because Kyle dragged Brooks so far down by snaking that he couldn't get back. Van Vliet did that a bunch of times. Kawhi does that a lot. It just seemed, it seemed to get the Bucks more scrunched into the paint. And the Raptors understood, okay, they're pretty scrunched. Let's kick it out and start moving the ball and moving the ball, and we can move it ahead of them. I don't know if that was on purpose, but I noticed that a lot last
night. I don't think this team has a lot of accidents in how they attack things. Like, Marc Gasol is a next-level basketball intellect, and so is Kyle, and so is Kawhi in his own way. Yes. He's not a great passer, but he's a very smart player. Pascal's still figuring out how basketball works, but he's a very smart player for that.
Yeah, I think his intuition's
Very good.
Brainy.
Like, Fred VanVleet, Danny Green... These are smart players, man. Like,
I love Fred VanVleet. I love that he owns it. I loved last night. He said, "Look, I can't lie to you guys. I've been missing a lot of shots. It's been pretty crappy. I'm gonna keep shooting. I'm just like, this is the guy that misses buzzer beaters. Is like, give it to me again. So I'll take it again.
I want to pose a question to you from the Milwaukee side. So Giannis, I thought, had a very interesting comment after the game, and it dovetails very much with the things the Milwaukee says win and lose, and they've been saying it all season. And frankly, it conforms to very much what Mike Budenholzer's strengths and weaknesses are. Some would cite a lack of flexibility. One of the great things about being the Milwaukee Bucks and a good Mike Budenholzer team is you're committed to a system and principles, and it is a read and react system, but the system you must be devoted to and faithful to, or it doesn't work. Giannis said, "We're not going to do anything different." That, and pretty much suggested, and didn't say it in these words, but gave the impression of, look, if Norm Powell wants to take 13 three-pointers, if Marc Gasol is going to be open 12 times, we'll gladly yield that if it means that we are keeping this team away from the paint, and we're by and large making good help decisions. Now, they didn't make great help decisions last
night. We're going to talk about that.
Okay, but it does speak, if you're the Milwaukee Bucks and you're coming out of this, obviously you're disappointed, you've lost two games. But, like, all right, I mean, if Norm Powell's going to take 18 shots and Kawhi Leonard's going to take 11, you know, plus another few true shots going to the basket with foul shots, I mean, we can live with this. Is that the question?
It's kind of the flip side of how Philly played them. Remember, Brett Brown, from the start of that series to the end, was going, this team was the number one three-point shooting team in the league, guys. I saw it. He says, saw her. It's great.
I love Brett. I said before, Brett Brown's accent and manner of speaking – if he got a group of my friends together and said, we're going to rob a bank and here's how we're going to do it, I would be like, I'm ready. Let's go. Like, I'm ready to go.
But he was terrified of that the whole series. And so even as Kawhi was operating at historic levels for the first four games, they said, we're not going to send too many guys. We're going to guard them as much one-on-one as we can. We're going to see what we can do. And Milwaukee's going the other way. Milwaukee's saying, Kawhi's going to have to go through 2 to 3 guys to get to the rim. And when we put Giannis on him, he has trouble with pull-up jumpers, especially if his legs aren't good. All you other guys got to beat us. And the Raptors, the idea was, you got enough guys to do that. And they're going to find out if they do.
So I think you just brought up the point I wanted to make sure we get to before we get out of here and head to the Cream City. Beautiful Milwaukee,
Wisconsin. Is that what it's called?
I think that's – Milwaukee's the Cream City, right? That's why they have cream on their uniforms. They're the Cream City.
Yes,
that's
the
thing.
So.
Last night – this is an interesting moment for the Bucks because they lost. Detroit was a non-series. This whole season was just good times USA for them, just rolling over everybody. Boston, they lose game one. I don't think they really – when they said all that same stuff after that game, we're not going to change anything. I think they knew this team can't beat us. Yeah. Like we're going to – and once we hit them, they're going to crack. And they cracked amid a hail of terrible Kyrie Irving shots. Last night was the first game where I think the Bucks can look themselves in the mirror and say, we failed last night as a defense. We were not as good as we normally are in defense. And there was a play in the, I think in the third quarter, it was Kawhi's second back cut dunk, where Middleton got back cut and Siakam was kind of just rolling through the lane and somebody else was there. And Giannis had his back turned. The other help defender had his, Mirotic, I think, had his back turned. And Kawhi got an and one. I think it was an and one. And Middleton turned and sniped, and then snapped rather at Giannis and Mirotic, like, where the hell were you guys? What's going on? And that to me was a culmination of they had a bad transition defense game. Like, remember you mentioned Norm Powell, and one of the things that he does is he just gets out and runs. Remember he had that and one where they kind of horse collared him?
Yeah.
And it, that was after a George Hill three, where George Hill missed, just kind of watched this three. Giannis just kind of hung around half court doing nothing, and the Raptors got a three on one that they did not earn. Milwaukee gave it to them. And there were a bunch of like Bledsoe had a couple of bad gambles really early in the game, going for steals. He had no chance to get it, and the Raptors punished him with threes. It was the first time where I think the Bucks kind of broke apart a little bit. And when Middleton snapped at Mirotic and Giannis, I thought, okay, now they're in a place they haven't. Now, I'm not making a big deal of it.
Oh, no. But
they're in a place they haven't been yet, and now they're here, and they're going to have to look. They're going to have to respond.
I will say this about the Raptors. As new as they are, Marc Gasol played 26 games in the regular season. He's up to, half a season of work with these guys. Kawhi in and out, Kyle in and out. They have been tested. Like, the game one against Orlando wasn't a test. They knew they were better than those guys. The whole adjustment in game two was, we should play hard. Let's try that.
Yeah.
Hey, that worked. But against Philly, that was a tough series, and game four was a tough game. And game seven was a tough game. And one thing Pascal Siakam said last night, he said, the beauty of this team is we're still figuring out who we are. We're still growing game to game. We're still learning new things about ourselves. And they've been tested more than Milwaukee has. And Milwaukee, the other thing, and I don't overrate this, but they don't have a lot of guys who have been here. They got George Hill. They got Pau Gasol on a cart. Like, that's it.
I mean, I still really like Milwaukee.
They're really good.
Let's be clear.
Yeah.
The odds say they're an overwhelming favorite to win this series. They have two games at home. They've been great at home. They will play better at home. They've now been pushed to a spot where, frankly, I didn't think Toronto would get both these games. I didn't think we would be in this spot, and I didn't think it would come in the manner that it came last night. But go ahead. You said you're
there. Yeah, I think there's a prescription. I do believe in systems. I think theirs is very good, and I think they have the personnel to service it.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in their staff. And I just think Giannis is still... I mean, I think he's a vicious animal, and he's going to, he's going to unleash that anger in very unpalatable ways to Toronto and Milwaukee.
One thing and it's not fair to say this because he played 44 minutes in Game 3. Now it was an overtime game, but I kind of want, when the Bucks are down 8, or Toronto's come back to tie, or the first quarter is not going well for them, and Giannis comes out at the 5:30 mark or whatever, like he always does. Every time that happens, Ilyasova comes in, and then Mirotic, or then they go, whatever, then Brook comes back in and takes out Giannis. Every time that happens at the halfway point of the first quarter, I'm like, I want a game where Bud is like, we're going balls out. You're playing 46 minutes tonight, and I'm deciding that now. And I know that's coaches like Steve Kerr, for all the crap we give him, has been, I think, validated in his spread the wealth. Bud is the same way. There's just part of it's like, man, it's so early to take him out. I kind of want to see them say, this is the moment now for us.
Yeah,
we're playing you 45.
If not 45, if not at the 5:30, maybe hold him till 2 or 2.5, right? I think there are ways to extend that bar on popcorn machine, a little bit longer. Popcorn machines is a wonderful site that if you want to see
indispensable.
If you like to study rotations and what coaches are thinking, it's a wonderful tool. But I'm with you. I don't know that that's going to happen.
I don't think it's
not
gonna
fundamentally that guy.
Well, and I think again they're fresh at the end of games. There's something about being fresh at the end of games, but the level of competition is now up. And by the way, I'm glad you brought up Philly because I think the playoffs happen so they're long. But they happen fast.
Mm-hmm.
There's a dissonance in saying that, but the things that happen are left in the past and we forget about them because we're so focused on what's happening now. I think Philly comes out of these playoffs looking better than a lot of people thought they were. Mm-hmm. Toronto wanted no part of any more games against that team. No part. Utah, like, they're big, they're nasty, they're physical, and for all the stuff I brought about, oh, do they fit, and this guy, like, there is just something unpleasant about being like, every dude on the floor is awesome and, like, has supernova-level talents, and there's no, like, Mirotić is a good player, but it's not, like, supernova. Like, even he's not J.J. Redick as a shooter. I think Philly comes out of this, like, obviously they're facing a very important offseason with Jimmy and Tobias and Redick all going. But for all the fit flaws that we all nitpick about that team, it's a damn good team. And they push this right. Raptors team to the limit.
There are three very, very good teams in this conference, and we're one of them.
Yeah.
And to circle back, the Raptors are two wins away from being able to tell Kawhi Leonard, we made the finals.
Mm-hmm.
We made the finals. Boston is breaking apart, maybe. Philly's got some big decisions to make. And the team that everyone anointed the heir apparent, the dynasty in the making, after they won two home games, like what you're supposed to do, we just beat them.
Not only that, but I'm willing to bet Masai will say to Kawhi, I could have made this team even better at the deadline. I would have gone all in at the deadline if I'd known you were staying. We can still go bigger than this. Like, there's all kinds of stuff that gets unlocked if you convince Kawhi to stay, obviously. But for the fact that they got a 34-year-old center and a 33-year-old point guard, and there were moments in this playoffs where it looked like there was no one else on the team wanted to play, this is a very good team.
And that exactly what you just said. That's why, so I said I picked the Raptors to make the finals before the playoffs, and I picked the Bucks to win this series. So I'm win or lose either way. and the reason I picked, ESPN makes us make picks.
Well, no, I went full Windhorst. I went full Windhorst this year.
So I flip-flopped. Because I said on TV, I'm picking the Raptors to make the finals. But then you get these emails like, okay, we need your picks for Raptors Bucks. And I was like, the Philly series made me lose a little faith in Toronto because it didn't look like anybody but Kawhi was ready.
They had games where they played six guys.
And that made me nervous. And the way they've rebounded to win these two games at home is really impressive. And I think, again, even more respect to Philly and how hard they pushed them.
But I want to just see, so I'm very fond of both of these teams. I mean, at the end of the day, what we do here is I feel like people, you know, you hate my team, I love my team. You know, I'm like, look, I'm a theater critic. You know, I go and I watch these productions and these performances. I study these organizations and these players. And the ones that entertain me and inspire me because of the way they work or the system is sensible, I give favorable reviews and whatever. I love both of these teams. Like, this is one of my favorite Eastern Conference Finals, like, matchups ever in any sport. And I just the Bucks. I'm ready to see a great Bucks performance. I've watched so much of their basketball this year, and it infuriated me last night, even though I had no rooting interest, to watch Middleton foul a guy 75 feet from the basket,
not
with 3 seconds
any guy,
left.
Though. Not just any guy.
It was
Kyle Lowry.
Right, Kyle Lowry. Like, come on. Like, to watch Giannis off the dribble, 21-footer, with still 5 seconds left clock, put the ball on the floor,
A lot of why it's a silly little thing. But when the Bucks look invincible, when they're like, oh, man, no one's going to beat them, a lot of it is because Giannis makes two or three pull-up threes in a game. And he did that a lot against Boston. When those go in, like he did that against Boston.
It's not my experience during the regular, and I know it's the regular season.
Second half of the season, he started to make threes.
But like, all right, so let's set aside that one. I mean, they pissed away between, as you said, the Bledsoe gambles and the stupid pull-ups and the Middleton thing, and just they pissed
people
away.
People can see your frowny face right now.
And they pissed away 8 to 10 possessions last night.
I will say this though,
and that's not them. They're a better team than them.
Yeah, they are, and they're a really good team, but. To me, when the Bucks are a supernova, it's when they're defending you and you're taking the shots you don't want to take, and then they run at you. And they run it right down your throat. They have three-point shooters running the corners, and Giannis going to the rim, and it's devastating.
And
that's where Eric Bledsoe gets
going. And by the way, I feel like they pulled back a couple of times last night. Like, I think there's a sort of a playoff instinct to be a little bit more conservative and methodical. Mm-hmm. And again, I think if the ball is in the hands of Brogdon, I trust them a little more. Hill as well. I just always loved Hill as sort of an off-ball player.
Yeah.
Like, I just loved George Hill on the floor as an off-ball player. But I just feel like they pissed away 8 to 10 possessions last night. I feel like they made dumber decisions than they normally make. And I'm a big Bucks fan, the way I'm a big Raptors fan.
But I want both teams
playing their best.
I still do think the Raptors, because they're a smart team that's still figuring themselves out, They're figuring the Bucks out too.
Yes.
And they had not played them with Gasol before the series.
And what's really interesting is they're doing such a beautiful job. We haven't talked about the Raptors' defense a lot.
Oh my gosh. This is a defensive series.
It is. They have been so good. And one of the interesting things is by putting Kawhi on Giannis, mm-hmm. it now means the help defenders are bigger.
Big dudes.
They're big
arms.
Dudes, and it's giving Giannis, I think, a little more pause. And, I mean, again, underrated, and I can't believe we've gotten this far. The Raptors' half-court defensive plan has been executed to perfection. This has been an exceptionally well-coached series, and it's been good to see.
Also, I can't believe I'm saying this. Oh, I can and I can't. I don't think there's a player in the NBA who's comfortable with Kawhi Leonard within 2 feet of him. I just don't think there is. I don't think there's anyone who likes that feeling.
He just induces discomfort.
And I don't. Well,
he takes the ball.
And I think there might. That's the thing. I think there might be. I don't know. Are there two guys in the league who do that to Giannis? Maybe. And I think he's one of them.
Well, because people know he's maybe the only guy in the league who can just be like, the ball you have, I'm going to now take it.
Yeah.
It's now my ball. And I'm going the other way. If you dare, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, there was a time where, if you were a B dribbler and you dribbled within 10 feet of him, it was was gone. It was out of your hands. It was like, I'm taking it. I'm gone.
It's a shark in the pool.
Yeah.
It's a 42% turnover rate.
You had to be Chris Paul to not have the ball taken away from you.
And if you ask Kawhi about it, sometimes he'll say, I just saw it. And if he gets a clear look at it, his hands are huge, but they're safe cracker hands, and they're fast. And so I think
he can be part of my Brett Brown robbery.
Giannis got going last night, but he's still not comfortable.
No.
And I think Kawhi makes you uncomfortable. I think Siakam does a good job. I think they got so many smart defenders. What the Raptors' defense at its best does is it reduces Giannis's impact and therefore exposes the talent gap between him and everybody else on that offense.
It also makes decision-making hard.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the Raptors are doing. They're just I'm watching the Bucks labor through decisions in the half court, even in transition to some extent. I feel like it was a team that was more programmatic. It is a read-and-react system. And I'm watching them sort of deliberate making decisions. And goes
that's
back to one of the reasons I'd like to see Brogdon. He's a little more decisive. I just think that the Raptors are forcing them into bad, mm-hmm. just not even bad decisions, slower decision-making.
Yeah.
We'll see. There's a big if this series went 12 games, there's a big Giannis game coming. And there's a big Mirotić game coming. There's a Mirotić 6 of 8 from 3 game, but it doesn't go 12. It goes 7, and they're running out of time to have the big Mirotić game. All their coaches are like, at some point he's going to hit 5. I don't care when. When is it going to happen?
Brooke Lopez had his game. Malcolm Brogdon and George Hill had their games. Middleton finally had his game in game 4. Bucks, the trick is, they haven't had enough guys, other than game 3, they haven't had a lot of guys do it at the same time.
So we'll see. But I'm just happy this is a great series.
Yep.
And,
really
with the Warriors are maybe in Cabo. I don't know what they're doing, but they have a lot of time to rest up and get ready. It's nice for the NBA to have last year we had 2 7-game conference finals, but it's nice that this is 2 really good teams. This is not, there is a sense now of uncertainty, even with the Bucks going home. I picked the Bucks, you picked the Bucks.
No, I didn't pick anybody.
You're not.
If I cover the series, I'm not picking it anymore.
Okay,
I'm going through the
winners. I think you would have picked the Bucks.
I probably would have.
I still would pick them, but there is a little bit of an air of uncertainty, which I think is very good for mm-hmm. the NBA basketball. Good basketball is good for the NBA. Okay, Bruce Arthur, I'll see you in Milwaukee.
You bet, buddy.
Kevin Arnovitz, I'll see you in Milwaukee.
Yes,
and the Fiserv.
The Fiserv, is it Fiserv?
I want to call it the Fiserv. I'm going to just mispronounce it and call it the Fiserv Forum just to make the name sponsor angry. Just like this will never be the Scotia Bank.
It is a beautiful new arena.
Beautiful new arena.
The Spicy Tuna Bowl, right?
They need one more set of hands at that pokey place.
Well, you got to go earlier. Floor. I told you got to go
the
earlier.
The Air Canada
I told
Center.
Peter Fagan.
It'll always be the ACC to me, but I call the one in Milwaukee, it's like the Bradley Adjacent Center. It's like, right.
I like
it's
the right. crumbling remains of the Bradley
that
Center.
I
hope they just keep it. All right. I'll see you guys there. Thanks for your time. And game 5 awaits.
Yep.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.